Welcome to the Hoban Minute, a podcast that will shift your perspective on the business, politics, and culture of the hemp and marijuana industries. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye. It's 420 somewhere, so let's dive in.
All right, everyone. This is Xavier tuning back in from NoCo at the Broadmoor in Colorado Springs. I've had a busy morning, and I'm happy to report I'm back in the podcasting room with three very special guests today. I've got Liz Geiselman, CEO of Rocky Mountain Regents, David Valancourt, CEO of the GMP Collective, and finally Darwin Millard, CSO of Final Bell Corp, aka the Spock of Cannabis. Now, I have a very interesting discussion for us to focus on today. You guys all represent a collection of some of the best ancillary service providers in the cannabis industry. That is to say, folks that are providing services, products, goods to cannabis operators that are not touching the plant themselves. Now, these are critical service providers in the cannabis space. They're the ones that are willing to work with cannabis operators when some other service providers out there will not work with cannabis, plant touching cannabis operators, because they see the money being used to pay those invoices and bills as dirty money. Now, you guys are helping provide these critical services to cannabis operators. Liz, can you maybe tell us a little bit about what you see the role of ancillary service providers being in the cannabis space, and particularly how they can help move the cannabis industry forward and not just provide a service to cannabis operators, but align with them and kind of power, the pioneering that we're seeing from the operators themselves?
Absolutely. So this is my 63rd trade show since 2014 in the cannabis space. In that time, I saw a lot of people that knew how to make a logo and a website, and then they didn't stand with the products that they brought in. I've also seen new companies coming in that now that the market has been established, now they want to chase the green from the plant touching, manufacturers, the MSOs. What I have seen and what I have done is we started a group called the Canna Consortium. We have 16 ancillary partners, all from plant to product, but they are trusted, ethical, been in the business for a long time, have capital, so they're not going to go under if you buy a $1.2 million machine and they're gone next week. But they're also here to educate and advocate for the industry. I think that's one of the things we don't ask as plant touching companies. We don't ask them to ask their ancillaries, how are you involved in the industry? How are you educating the market? How are you advocating for the market? Because at the end of the day, my company is making quite a bit of money off cannabis, but I don't have to pay the regulatory. I don't have to have special licensing. I don't have to deal with ever-changing specifications state by state. You guys do. And really, it comes down to aligning ourselves to make sure that you've got the right partners in the fight for all of this, for all of cannabis, to seek better regulation state by state, and hopefully, God willing, federal legalization or at least regulation that can really push this. And that's why I love having Darwin and David here, because we've worked a lot on this. Coming from a scientific background, high-grade chemistry and laboratories, these two gentlemen know more about the science of manufacturing than I could possibly ever. So I lean on them to teach me what I need to be able to sell to my clients and also advocate and educate for them. So I'll leave it to you guys.
Well, and I also want to add that, I had the distinct pleasure of meeting you guys, both of you, I think, originally, when I was actually working at an extraction, Class 1, Division 1, C1D1, C1D2, all sorts of terminology out there, a manufacturer of explosion-proof booths that volatile solvent manufacturers would use to manufacture their concentrates. Now, David, Darwin, I understand you guys have both been, in the manufacturing and kind of standard side of the industry for a while now. To Liz's point, what are some of the ways that manufacturers, that service providers can actually meaningfully, beyond just the education piece and the advocacy piece and saying, yeah, we're a cannabis company, how can people actually, meaningfully impact what operators are doing and kind of the challenges that they're facing when it comes to some of these regulatory and compliance issues.
I think it's a great question, Xavier, and I will never forget, the pleasure of getting to meet you during the pandemic when you worked, you were a volunteer member alongside with me at the Facility Design Committee at the National Cannabis Industry Association. That's just one perfect example of many ways to give back to the industry to provide operators with that expertise. So let's just use the Facility Design Committee as one myopic case study where we had 17 individuals representing companies like yourself with the extraction explosion booth room to, providing good manufacturing practice and standardization consulting and advising to design architects that are doing, that have been building facilities in the cannabis space and prior to that for decades, right? So it's that level of expertise that came together, that put money into the pot, that put their time and expertise together and said, what are the problems that we commonly see? Because the problem that you see is a similar problem that an architect sees that our operators have. And they don't know where to go and where to look, so we can provide that institutional knowledge and capital knowledge that we've all gained and give back, whether it's through webinars, podcasts, white papers, thought leadership that gives true educational value, because the education in the industry has typically been, underground, suppressed, sharing of information so that folks don't have to learn the hard way, which is expensive, is something that not many people have the luxury to overcome. And so we bring that expertise and resources to the industry through trade organizations like that and through standards development organizations that can write the playbook for the industry. Because as Liz said, operators, they've got, changing, shifting regulations. They've got, lack of credibility just because they say the word, cannabis or marijuana in it. Their bank accounts get shut down. They've got 280E tax issues. We don't have any of those burdens. So it's our duty. If we don't have our customers, just like if they don't have their customers, if they're not producing safe product, they don't have customers. If we don't have a thriving cannabis industry, we don't have customers either. So it's in our best interest to do that. It actually, rising tides lifts all boats. And that's the ethos that I believe we all live here and the companies that we align with. And, it's an honor to be here to be able to continue to do that.
Yeah, no, that's a very important message. And I think, to your point, the standardization and kind of the use of, maybe more legitimized, I'm using air quotes here, sources of information that maybe aren't as conflicted or, could be seen as a little bit more independent than some of the licensed operators out there. I think, policymakers, regulators, Capitol Hill, they're all tired of the pot people coming on and saying, we love pot, we want more pot, right? Let's legalize pot. Instead, they want to see, maybe someone that's a little bit less traditional coming in saying like, well, hey, maybe there's an opportunity here. Let's look at this a little bit closer. And so I agree that I think it's critically important that we provide kind of that bridge between, the esoteric cannabis operator and, kind of the suited, going back to the suits versus operators debate we always hear about, kind of the more suited, legitimate, let's say, source of information, or at least the person that a policymaker and a regulator might actually listen to. So Darwin, you are the chief science officer at Final Bell Corp. Now, I've been a fan of yours for a long time. I remember when you branded yourself as the Spock of cannabis. I have a background prior to working in the extraction room company. I was actually in licensed concentrate manufacturing facilities here in Colorado, working, doing some closed loop extraction, working with, volatile solvents mostly. And I'm kind of curious to hear, what's a recent development in the cannabinoid product space, something that maybe you can tell us about without violating an NDA or an employment contract that has you excited about, kind of new product developments this year or even the next few years.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, Xavier. I really appreciate it. I've had a wonderful journey, and getting an opportunity to work with Final Bell has been amazing. I'm not sure if you are familiar, but recently we just announced our worldwide exclusive relationship with Cookies.
Congratulations.
We have a parent company or a sister relationship with a hardware manufacturer, 14th Round. So we produce not only packaging and hardware, but also do the co-manufacturing for the Cookies brand internationally, which has been an amazing opportunity. And what that brings is innovation to the floor in regards to some of that packaging and hardware that we provide. So we're kind of an interesting cross between not only being a co-man, so a processor, a producer, someone who actually touches the plant, but also being an ancillary service provider. We manufacture hardware and packaging for the industry as well. So kind of
before I was the Spock of cannabis and the chief science officer, right, I've been an engineer and consultant for the cannabis space for 18 years. And through that time, I've seen a lot of interesting ancillary service providers pop up by just put cannabis in your name and you're now a cannabis service provider. That's it.
And mark it really up matter. 15%.
And you've got that 40% cannabis markup that you have to deal with, right? So that's been fun to deal with, but navigating legitimate vendors and finding qualified vendors. So that's that value add to the actual ancillary service provider has been through kind of when I drank the Kool-Aid with David here and joined ASTM International's Technical Committee D37 on cannabis, helping create standards, right? It's like, oh yeah, well, these service providers can increase their value add by complying to standards, because that way they can provide certified equipment to manufacturers that can be qualified. And that's really important if you're going through a GMP certification program that requires qualification of the equipment. You can't just buy something from China and plug it in, right, and get it to work. You might need to get a field UL certification, right, for that piece of equipment to now be actually usable. Right. And having seen the industry evolve, not only seeing our service providers step up and actually being, you know, providing these legitimate certified and accredited pieces of equipment, you know, UL listed, as well as ASME stamped certified for pressure vessels and things, which are all critical types of value adds, and being able to provide a vendor. And like what Liz was saying earlier, you know, lots of people came into the industry, but then, you know, 6 months, 12 months later, they're not here anymore. Yeah. Or they would make big promises on R&D equipment that they had just proven out in the lab and are trying to take and go, you know, process scale now or production scale, and they're showing it off at NJBizCon or, you know, the next great convention or whatever it is. But do they actually have the capital or the resources to then support the clients who are buying that equipment? Or do they kind of just sell you on a golden goose?
Right, right. They happen to have a you know, prototype model in the garage they developed, and you got your hands on that prototype model, and that happens to be the only one that exists.
Right? Yep, you got it. We've seen it time and time again in the industry.
No, and it's true. I think over the last, you know, I mean, capital contraction is something that's talked about far too much when it comes to cannabis these days. But you know, it is a reality, and I think we have seen kind of that churn and that process of folks coming in that don't have the robust financials, the robust business plan, the robust strategy in place that's beyond, you know, the next 12 months. They're gone now. And it's kind of leaving, you know, the responsible business operators to fill that stead. And again, I think coming back again to the first message is that those responsible business operators then have a meaningful opportunity to pass that knowledge and education on to their clients, the cannabis operators, right? And help them understand what a good business practice and how a good business is run, and you know, how that looks from an industry that maybe isn't constantly treading water and trying to keep their heads above that waterline.
Well, and I'd like to just add to something that Darwin had said about both of these gentlemen are on ASTM D37 Standards Commission, and God bless you for that work, because I know that some of those debates can be pretty contentious, even if it's just over a word. I'm also on the board of NCIA, the National Cannabis Industry Association. I've served on their manufacturing committee for some time, but then about a year and a half ago, I joined a group called the National Cannabis Laboratories Council, and we got together 19 laboratories across the country and took a deep look into what the regulations were state by state and what products that they were testing for, and then using the data, blind data from these laboratories, to say, is it necessary to test flower for XYZ? Why is this state testing for 50 heavy metals, and this one's only testing for 7 pesticides? So coming up with a standardized, set of standards is something that we've been looking at, and continuing that organization to continue to bring blind data into this so that we can continue to feed regulators real factual stuff that we're seeing out of laboratories in all these different states. Now we have over 47 laboratories that are on board. We're getting more ancillary companies on board. We've got these gentlemen that we've been working with ASTM, and working to go to the FDA and say, listen, guys, you don't have to start from scratch. We've already done it. Here's the standards. Here's what you should be testing for. And there's another group that's doing a standardized laboratory accreditation for cannabis laboratories. So with these three massive organizations writing 55-page white papers and, you know, and again, gruelingly fun work, I can tell you. But we can go to the FDA now if we can get enough partners into this to work with us and advocate. We can go to the FDA. We don't need an act of Congress. Mm-hmm. We need the FDA to listen to us and say, we already know the answers and here they are and here's the playbook. Go.
The best part, if I can add to that, is first, one of the amazing co-chairs of NCLC is Alina Rodriguez, who is the chair of the laboratory subcommittee at ASTM International D37 on cannabis. NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, is the vice chair of that committee as well, because there is an act of Congress that requires executive agencies to be at the table to adopt those standards. So we're developing the playbook. I love the crap out of NCLC and anything Liz, basically, if you want to just know where to be in the future, you just look up Google Liz Geiselman's name and see what she's attached herself to, because she's driving with the right people. She aligns herself with the right people for all of the right reasons. I mean, you've been doing this. You don't have to be in cannabis. Your life would probably be a lot easier weren't in the cannabis industry and stayed in all
It'd
the other
be a
businesses
lot quieter, that's for
yeah,
sure.
Maybe, but less, you know, less exciting, right? We all do this out of passion and we're writing that playbook and it's incumbent on us to develop that playbook through a consensus process to debate when we have an issue of cannabis versus marijuana versus hemp and 0.3% or is it 7 pesticides or 13 pesticides. We can all duke it out in the room through a consensus process to develop that resolution. And that is, you know, consensus does not mean unanimity, but it means more than a simple majority. And that's what's important and that's recognized globally. So we're doing it for the industry, with the industry, and it's so much fun.
Right. And I think critically is just not allowing the operators to do it by trying, right? They're not having to navigate these waters by just, again, putting one foot out and then all of a sudden realizing they're stepping into a pothole. Instead, they have, you know, D37 sitting in a room arguing for hours over the meaning of one word, and then putting out standards that hopefully will then impact and prevent, you know, cannabis operators from you know, having these missteps.
Yeah, I mean, and since we're talking about standards there, I think it's important in wanting to support the ancillary service providers, right? MJ BizCon, hopefully it's okay to mention them, but I mean, we had several ancillary service providers, major gas manufacturers, Praxis Air and others, parent companies coming up to talk about, well, you know, hydrocarbon and other compressed gases, CO2s and others being used in industry. We had Simple Green come up to us and go, you know, we know our cleaners are being used, but should they be? These are great questions. And now we've come to a point where some of the standards we're starting to create directly impact ancillary service providers and equipment manufacturers, et cetera, so that we welcome them coming to the table with us so that we can have better cleaners that we know, right, can come in direct contact with cannabis plants or extracts. Right. And we have compressed gases and we have specifications for what might actually be extraction grade solvent, perhaps, versus just, you know, using analytical grade or whatever it might be, because there are discrepancies between different types of gases and or solvents in general. And that's where I think what's exciting about being able to participate with the D37 and helping to support not only operators, but every aspect of the supply chain.
And I think that alone is evidence of the work that you're doing is meaningful, is valuable, and is actually guiding, you know, some of these more traditional industry operators into cannabis and making them realize, like, hey, you know, we've been looking at this from arm's length for a while now, and we know some of our clients are in the space, but we haven't really jumped into it yet. We haven't really engaged with them. We haven't worked with them as an ancillary service provider to really help make sure that what we are doing for them and what the relationship that we have developed is indeed the one that they want, the one that we want, and is beneficial for everyone, including, you know, the end consumer. So, you know, I think one thing a common thread that we've discussed through this, and I think common thread today and this week at NoCo, has been really kind of a unified message, right? How does, one, the hemp industry unify itself and kind of align that message? And then two, something that we were discussing before, you know, hitting record and going live here, is how does cannabis and marijuana, or, you know, hemp and marijuana, how do they align? And why are they seen kind of butting heads right now? Why are they at odds? You know, Liz, what is something that you think is critical in the next 5 years to see from a policy perspective to help kind of drop those barriers, right? And make people realize that perhaps it's really, you know, the end products, the consumer products that we should be regulated. It's not necessarily the source plant itself. You know, what are some, if you can, you know, what are some suggestions that you might have, maybe some low-hanging fruit of ways that these industries can start to maybe align their messaging a little bit more in a unified fashion?
Absolutely. Well, when it comes to cannabis, the entire genus of the plant, I think that we actually, what we're talking about, the standardization and getting this through the FDA, that would be a huge hurdle. You know, the Farm Bill has been here since 2014, and they still don't know what to do with CBD or any of the other cannabinoids coming off of a hemp plant. Just by getting these standards put in place, it fixes all of that that has been in place for 9 years, kind of unregulated and kind of wild westy, and allows us a pathway forward with marijuana intoxicating, however you want to say that word, cannabinoids coming out of other plants. I think that's the first step, because then we've got public safety. You know, we've got this thing here. So that's the first step I see. We see huge innovations. You know, as ancillary providers, we see the guys that are kind of doing it on the front line, doing very different extraction techniques. You know, we're getting to see a lot of the innovation. So we get to also stand back from an ancillary perspective and say, hey, as you're doing that, is that safe? We've seen this from the nutraceutical market. We've seen this from the pharmaceutical market. We've seen it in the food market. That's not how they do it, and there's a reason for it. So let us help you with the innovation. When it comes to regulatory cap hill, you know, I don't have great hope, which is a horrible thing to say. I mean, I love going there and talking to people, but you know, we as an industry only gave $5 million last year in lobbying, and that sounds like a lot for us who are running households, but for a lobbying effort, when you've got oil and gas or pharma giving $150, $200 million in lobbying efforts and supporting candidates to support their initiatives, we kind of get shoved to the back burner, and we are kind of the fun thing, you know, rather than talking about foreign policy or banking regulations. You know, cannabis is kind of a fun talking point on the road for candidates. They want to support us. They don't know how. We're not informing them. We're not giving them the information so that they can really be a true advocate for us in this industry. And we're not supporting them financially, which also is a problem. And ancillaries need to be on the front line of that because we are making the most money from this industry. You know, when it comes right down to it, it's really getting legislators in front of operators and people in the space to talk about what this actually has. You know, and the other thing about the marijuana market in particular, I think it just got way too culture heavy. Not that I'm against the culture, but, you know, I love some of, you know, the musicians and I love the unts music and all of that stuff. But this started as plant-based medicine. And on both sides of this entire plant, it is plant-based medicine, regardless whether it's an intoxicating cannabinoid or not. There is plant-based medicine. There is research being done on all sorts of different levels, seeing CBD being used in a clinical trial for concussive injuries with NFL players. That's massive, you know, at Yale University or Penn State or one of the, I mean, what they're doing in some of this work has real implications to future and innovation in medicine. And that's what we've got to get back to, is talking about the innovation in the medicine that we could be providing and providing it safely.
Like, yeah, kind of almost reincorporating or incorporating cannabis into the mainstream psyche and kind of, you know, public culture. I mean, well, not culture as much as, you know, kind of public policy. Yeah, well, also just the commercial aspects of life, right? Having it be included just as part of everyday life. Which means, you know, that we have a lot of work to do on the education side. And so, yeah, a never-ending, it seems, challenge when it comes to the education piece. So, you know, final question I wanted to ask to you two, David and Darwin, speaking on the topic of education, you know, the work that you guys are doing with ASTM is all focused on presenting, as I understand it, you know, a standardized, well, standards that would apply to the cannabis industry. And we were talking again before going on air here that these standards are used, you know, in the legislative process and have been for you know, hundreds, dozens, a long time, many years. And that ASTM has been kind of the go-to standard provider in that legislative process. And so what have you guys, or what's the most exciting thing that you've kind of done with D37 that you've seen kind of been looked at from, let's say, like a federal you know, legislator, and then, or even a state-based legislator, and said, oh, you know what, these ASTM guys, they're legit. You know, they're not cannabis people. Let's listen to what they have to say.
Well, I mean, so there are a lot of exciting standards that we're working on right now. Within the O4, which is one of 14 subcommittees under the D37, which is on processing and handling, we are working on a set of guidance materials and practices for handling dust from ground sources of cannabis materials. So whether that's ground inflorescence of a cannabis plant, or ground seed, or ground stalk, or ground whole plant, or even ground crystals, crystallized cannabinoids, right? Each one of those forms of dust poses a safety hazard for, or an occupational health and safety hazard. So as you guys know, there was a death in industry from a laborer from inhalation of dust. So this is a major driver for us, is to help get some guidance out for the industry. And another one that we're working on, which I think is will be critically important, is a suite of standards related to what is an intoxicating cannabinoid. Actually providing the identifiers or metrics which would allow you to determine whether or not a cannabinoid solicits intoxicating effects, which would then allow us to use Delta-9 THC, for instance, everyone's very aware of this particular cannabinoid, as our baseline, as level one risk, or level one intoxication, let's just say, which allows us to build a classification system of intoxication for every other cannabinoid, starting with, with one plus or one negative or whatever, which regulators are chomping at the bit right now to have. How do we measure the amount of intoxication that occurs from taking whatever that daily amount might be? What is that daily amount? So these are some of the challenges right now that within the O4 we have several working groups focusing on. But within the O8, again, we have 14 different subcommittees. O8 is on devices and appliances, which is one that I chair. We have probably three of the most critical specifications that we're creating for industry right now. Specifications for herbal product vaporizer devices, and specifications for herbal extract vaporizer devices. And specifically, those specifications would cover the materials of construction used to make those devices, and providing limits for restricted substances of those based on, what part of the device are they, right? Are they in the vapor flow path, et cetera, right? Or do they have the extract, for instance, sit in them for long periods of time going through heating cycles? And how does that affect the chemistry of the actual device itself, right? So we're focusing on that, but also specifications for the non-cannabinoid ingredients that are used in many of these formulated extracts that are then intended for vaporization. So what goes into the device? So as a consumer of these are all super critically important standards that we'll be working on over the next 5 years.
That's amazing. I think we all remember, I think it was the vitamin E, right? The vitamin E scare. That kind of ran through, let's say, vape supplies in 2017, 2018. Was it that long ago?
19 into 20, I think. Yeah, right before the pandemic.
Yeah, it was.
I think it's amazing because, every time I feel like I have maybe a novel shower thought, or I'm thinking about kind of the intricacies of some product or process, it's comforting, I think, to know that David and Darwin have already essentially broken down the entire thing and considered every single possible component of that process and product. Yeah,
but they're 8 and 10 levels deep in this thing.
They're way past that initial shower thought. Well, guys, it's been true pleasures having you three on and in chatting today here at NoCo. Any final thoughts, messages, places that people can find you?
The only thing I'll add is, to build off of Darwin there and what you just said. I mean, Darwin and I are, we at least have our finger on the pulse with every shower thought that you and basically 1,200 people have probably thought about from what could go wrong in the cannabis industry. And, that's still going to evolve, and it's nonstop, which is great. And it's because of the 1,200 plus members. And I'll just point out, some of the workshops that are being put on now because of this, spun out of this. So there's an animal feed and fiber workshop that is happening the end of April, on April 24th and 25th. And that is open. That is something that ASTM puts on as part of its nonprofit support to technical committees and entire industries like ourselves. You know, speaking to Liz's point back to the NCLC earlier with lab testing and impurities, you know, I worked with the U.S. Pharmacopeia, another amazing organization that folks should recognize as probably one of the most credible, if not the most credible, science and medicine agents or institution in the world. It's over 200 years old, developed their monograph for cannabis in fluorescence, with the identity, you know, impurities, contaminant levels, et cetera. And we turn that into an ASTM standard. So there's a standard specification for medical cannabis and fluorescence. Out of that came a lot of discussion around, for example, heavy metals. Should it just be testing for the four heavy metals that are common in the dietary supplement and natural products industry? Or should we look at, say, 15 or 22 that the pharma industry is required to do a risk evaluation for? And that sparked what's now going to be in October, a whole global workshop on contaminants for cannabis products to actually discuss this, to look at the data and figure out what is the level of evidence. And it ties back to route of administration. Are you inhaling or ingesting or putting it on your body? That has a different implication. So we have to solve those answers. We have to answer those hard questions with data, and it takes a whole ecosystem of experts to come together. It's not just Darwin. It's not just me. It's not just Liz and her whole team. Like, it's regulators. It's forensic toxicologists. It's scientists. Like, we all come together at the table, and it's just so encouraging to see us now, 6 years old, as a committee, to driving a lot of that forward. So it's just an honor to be able to work with all these people in the industry, and you know, we're an open door. We open to all, and that's one of the other best parts.
Yeah, and I think that's the final thought that I would have, is that it is not hard to be a part of these organizations. Actually, it's kind of hard to get out of them once you're in them, to be quite frank. But I think as ancillary partners, being a part of either the National Cannabis Laboratories Council, if that's kind of your play, if you do analytical laboratory, if you're on D37, being a part of these conversations is vital. It's vital for future-proofing the industry, but it's also vital for future-proofing your business, right? And your client's business. This isn't just me trying to run my business. I don't sell widgets. I sell a lot of weird widgets to cannabis people. So I have to make sure that the widgets that I'm supplying them are meeting those specifications. And ancillaries need to be a part of this conversation. We've seen it time and time again. If ancillaries aren't part of the conversation when regulations come down, their product can be shut out of a market very, very quickly. Also, when we talk about ancillaries, let's talk about laboratory testing. If you've got regulators coming in and saying, as of June 1st, we're going to require you to have 14 more standards. First of all, do the standards exist that you can test against? That's a big question. Legislators don't know that. And secondly, can the laboratories, do they have the equipment to meet the tolerances that you guys are putting forth? You may see a huge backlog in lab testing and a huge backlog of supply that can't get to marketplace because the supply chain in lab testing isn't there to meet the regulatory. So having that conversation and being a part of the conversation is vital to have any kind of future proofing of your business, regardless of what it is in cannabis.
That's an amazing message to end on. I think, you know, it's important for ancillary businesses that service the cannabis industry to start thinking of themselves as cannabis businesses as well, because they are. And so, you know, we'll end on that. Thank you guys much for joining me today, and I hope you guys all enjoy the rest of NoCo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another enlightening conversation. If you liked what you heard, hit that subscribe button to get all future episodes fresh out of the studio. Suggestions for topics or guests for the show, please send them to hello@bobhoban.com. And as always, thanks to Benzinga for powering the Hoban Minute.